Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz. Lots to catch up on this week, and we'll be hearing from you, or at least some of you, that is, who were surveyed by Pan-Atlantic SMS. It's probably the deepest dive into voters' psyche since last Election Day. Joining me in Portland for a change, Steve Missler, and from the State House, Mal Leary. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Well, let's start at the top of the poll. A plurality of 43.2% of Mainers believe the economy is on the right track, which the pollsters say is the most confidence Mainers have shown in the economy since 2003. But it's just a single percentage point ahead of those who believe the economy is headed in the wrong direction. And a breakdown, Mallory, also exposes that two Mainers thing that everyone likes to say they're trying to avoid.
Well, part of that goes to the issue that you were just discussing in the setup here, and that is those people who feel the economy is not doing so well. We still have some, what I would call, significant unemployment in some counties in the state, Washington County, Piscataquis County, Aroostook County, and they're seeing a much different economy than York and Cumberland, for example, where, you know, there's a real premium on workers because they simply have more jobs than there are workers. Where up in some of the more rural areas of the state, there are still more workers than jobs. So there is economically clearly two Maines, and I think you're seeing that in this survey where you have this strong number of people saying, well, it's not doing all that well for me, because it isn't, compared to folks in southern Maine.
But Steve Missler, the economy wasn't the most important thing on people's minds.
No, it wasn't. It was access to health care and insurance coverage, and by a wide margin. 28% of respondents picked health care as the most important issue facing Maine. That's 10 points higher than the second place issue of high taxes. And there are a couple of interesting points to make about this. And this was the same issue that dominated Mainers' concerns during the 2018 election, and an issue that Democrats effectively utilized to not only take the House of Congress, but also to sweep the State House in Maine and the governor's mansion. And if you recall, a lot of their messaging centered on Republican efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act, which includes provisions that protect coverage for pre-existing conditions. And also, the timing of this poll is really interesting, given that President Trump announced this week that he wants to take another crack at cutting the ACA. And you could almost hear the collective groan from congressional Republicans, and perhaps more acutely from Senator Susan Collins, who is up for re-election next year. And Collins told some reporters in the national press that she was appalled by the president's statement. And this poll is a good illustration of the reason why.
Yeah. And you would think, too, this is not going to augur well for Trump in 2020 if he's trying to once again win another electoral vote up in northern Maine.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they have to have a replacement if they're going to repeal the ACA, and they have not been able to come up with one that people can seem to agree on.
Hmm. And to that point, if you look at the party affiliation, it gets very interesting, because you still have 19% of Republicans saying that health care and insurance coverage is the most important issue. That is significant. 26% independents, 42% Democrats. So you got a significant number of Republicans that are citing health care as their major issue.
The Affordable Care Act has actually been the law now for almost a decade. Mm-hmm. And so after a while, it becomes one of those things people really begin to understand it, begin to count on it, and makes it much harder to change.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's harder to take something away once you've provided it. I mean, you could see that with Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, et cetera. Those programs were installed in the New Deal and thereafter, and efforts to either cut them or remove them or replace them have always met fierce resistance. And now you're seeing the ACA sort of drifting up into that same level of need, at least according to people who depend on it.
Mal, this poll also starts to kind of peer ahead at that 2020 elections. What is it showing us?
Well, it's interesting because Senator Susan Collins lost a little ground in terms of the favorability rating, yielding to Senator King, who, of course, was on the ballot this year and had an active campaign, which may account for one reason why he's ahead of her by a little bit. But it also, for the first time, had a actual opponent that they polled on, and that is the Speaker of the House, Sarah Gideon, was a poll for favorability ratings and in a head-to-head contest with Susan Collins. What was interesting to me was it shows the long-time thing that pollsters have told me, and that is around the State House, legislative leaders are very well-known and are very much key players. But you go a few miles away from the State House, they don't know who the Speaker is, they don't know who the President is, let alone who the Assistant Minority Leader is in the State House.
As I think back over it over the decades, historically, legislative leadership positions have not been stepping stones to higher office in the state.
That's true, except if they go through the Attorney General's office, which Janet Mills has shown is right. a stepping stone.
Yeah.
Of course, the Attorney General is elected by the legislature. So, I mean, that's sort of an indirect route, but you're right. I mean, most of these candidates came from, Bruce Poliquin, his successful campaign was off being state treasurer, another post elected by the legislature. So you start looking at these contests, and we haven't had all that many. You know, neither party really put up a very strong candidate against Angus King, and it showed. I mean, he came up with a very, very strong win. And those candidates that did run the Democrats, Zach Ringelstein, was totally out of nowhere, pretty much unknown in the party. And the state senator, Eric Brakey, who was the Republican nominee, arguably was not very well known outside of Auburn and probably still isn't, even though he ran for the United States Senate.
All right. So presumably that means that Sarah Gideon didn't poll all that well against Susan Collins.
No, she didn't. And a lot of people just don't know who she is. I mean, she's, I think it was 40%, Mal, I think was the number I recall, that just don't know her. And so what was also interesting is that Sarah Gideon is the only Democrat that they ran a head-to-head matchup with Susan Collins. And that is a question that lingers among some Democratic activists, is who is going to put their hat into the ring against Collins in 2020, who is presumably more vulnerable because of the votes for Brett Kavanaugh and the Supreme Court and the tax cut package from 2018. But it was interesting. I had a conversation with a prominent Democratic fundraiser and donor to Democratic candidates, and this person was telling me, I haven't had any candidates come to me and ask for financial support, and this is the time to do it, and that it hasn't happened yet. And so right now, Sarah Gideon is apparently the only person that people think might run. She hasn't declared that she's going to, but everybody else remains a mystery. I think we're getting to the point where that mystery needs to be resolved pretty quickly, because it's time. If you're going to mount a serious challenge against Susan Collins, you need to get in the ring and start organizing a campaign now.
All right. All this past week, we've been reporting on the controversy surrounding Central Maine Power's plan to build a new transmission line that would move Canadian hydropower to Massachusetts. Governor Mills came out in favor based on sweeteners CMP has offered, but that didn't convince folks in our hometown of Farmington, who joined other towns in opposing the project. So, Steve Missler, was the governor being brave or foolish when she actually decided to attend and speak at that meeting?
Well, I mean, judging by the reaction that I have heard at the State House and elsewhere, you can make an argument both ways. On one hand, people were applauding her for sticking her neck out and advocating for a project that seems to be getting more unpopular by the day. I mean, the vote in Farmington was a perfect example. It was to rescind support that they had previously granted to this project. So they were voting to take that away, and that's exactly what they did, and by a margin of more than 2-1. And despite Mills getting up and speaking about its benefits to residents in her hometown.
Sure, there are trade-offs. There always are trade-offs of some sort. But the fundamental question is, to me, do we want to be pouring money down the drain, fattening the purses of big oil and big gas companies for the rest of our lives? And I say no. Think about that every time you turn up the thermostat in your home. Think about it every time you hear of a business that is unable to locate here because of high electricity costs.
I mean, she did speak at length, and she tried to cast some of the opponents of this as hiding behind dark money and slick ads, which is true, that we don't know who is funding those ads. And they are overstating some of the facts of that case that are before the Public Utilities Commission. But some people are wondering, like, why would the governor further align herself with a project that keeps losing local support and which is now under siege by lawmakers in the legislature and in her own party? I also heard that some on her staff attempted to make a similar argument before she actually went to the Farmington meeting and spoke. But apparently Governor Mills wasn't persuaded and decided to go ahead and go anyway. And some people undoubtedly admire the courage of doing that. But there are certainly others who question the wisdom of the governor further sticking her neck out on this project.
Well, it's clear that the governor on this issue has decided to take a different position than many of the progressive Democrats. And I think that is just a harbinger of what we're going to see in this legislative session. There are a whole bunch of bills that have been put in by the more progressive part of the Democratic Party, and they all have some pretty big price tags. Well, in her budget, she virtually spends the cupboard bare, so there's no money, no additional money for any of these projects that have been proposed. And you're immediately setting up a real tension there where, say, the progressives could pass something in the House and Senate that funds some project or some program that they want, and then it just dies because mm-hmm. the governor won't support it. And therefore, there's no way to come up with the money needed to pay for it unless you raise a tax. And I think it's been pretty clear that she will not support any tax. She hasn't explicitly said that she would veto any tax increase, but she certainly has hinted strongly that any sort of tax increase bill would get tough scrutiny by her and possibly a veto.
Yeah, and on the transmission line projects specifically, there's a bill that would study carbon emissions of reductions that are purported to be as a result of this project. And I can tell you just from doing some reporting on this that tension that Mal is talking about unrelated to budget matters exists on this project and on that bill. There's a real concern that if Democrats push this bill and other bills that are related to the CMP project, that there could be a situation that they're trying to avoid, which is a public dispute with their governor over a transmission project or budgetary matters, if you will. And that jockeying behind the scenes is going on as we speak, even, you know, as the Energy and Utilities, the Environmental and Natural Resources Committee debates that bill. And they're trying to find a way to thread the needle to satisfy their own Democratic activists without, you know, having a real out front confrontation with the governor.
There has been some out front confrontations over the budget. And it's interesting, it's the same committee, Energy and Natural Resources. They are very upset that a number of positions are going unfilled in the Department of Environmental Protection because the federal money has dried up. And the governor in her budget has not proposed state funds to pick up those positions. That was a flashpoint, if you will, during the public hearing between committee members of ENR and the governor's commissioner, Jerry Reed. So I think we're going to see more, Steve, of some of this stuff boiling over into public view that we've been hearing about in the background.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, it's easy to talk about having family fights in the background, but it's really hard to actually suppress them and keep them there. It's almost inevitable that they'll spill into public view.
Meanwhile, back in Washington, D.C., Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell wanted to embarrass Democrats by forcing them to vote against the Green New Deal proposed by some members of the House. Alas, McConnell was trumped. As the administration announced, it wants the courts to throw out the entire Affordable Care Act. So what did Maine Senators Collins and King do on that Green New Deal vote?
Well, they both voted with the Republican majority to block the non-binding resolution that is the Green New Deal, a move that earned King some blowback from Democratic activists, at least on social media and, you know, on comments on stories that were published on our website, et cetera. And why? Well, maybe because there's an expectation that he would vote with Democrats because he happens to caucus with them. If you recall, Democrats voted present as sort of a protest to what they described as McConnell's cynical ploy to link Democrats, especially the gazillion or so that are running for president in the U.S. Senate, to documents that are actually not in the Green New Deal, but helped make that proposal a piñata for the GOP. Things like eliminating airplane travel, cows, and so on. That's why you saw Senator Mike Lee of Utah talking about how people in northern climates will be riding tauntauns when cars are suddenly prohibited. And lawmakers were also like pounding jugs of milk prior to the vote, just to, you know, to demonstrate their allegiance to dairy, I guess. It's also why McConnell, who unilaterally controls most of the bills that make it to the floor for votes, gleefully brought this resolution forward. Now, King, while not voting present with the Democrats, did criticize McConnell for his what he called a stunt. But he also said that the Green New Deal is overly broad and realistic. And Collins just simply voted with a Republican majority and opted not to criticize the Senate leader.
Gentlemen, thank you much for the time. We appreciate it, as always.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mal Leary and Steve Missler, and that's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. Catch abbreviated versions of the Pulse each Monday on Morning Edition. Our next podcast will be part of next Sunday's Weekend Edition and be available online, too. Willis Ryder Arnold is our producer. I'm Erwin Gratz.